Harih Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Now that the new path is ready, then everybody can walk on the path and not on the grass.
Yes.
Otherwise we'll have to put out bear traps. Yes. Now we've saved you having to walk that extra, what is it, 5 meters like that, so take advantage. Pradyaya Prakashika. In the 17th chapter, Krishna, requested by Uddhava, explains to him about karma mixed with bhakti, as described by Hamsa, and the duties of brahmacharis and householders. Sardartha Darshani 11.17.1. Right, because when you're saying karma mixed with bhakti means that you're taking varnashram and applying it in a devotional way. So that's daiva varnashram. Right? So it's a devotional application. Yes, like that. After Uddhava inquires from Sri Krishna about the duties of the social and religious orders of the varnashram society, the Lord replies that in the first age, Satyayuga, there was only one social order called Hamsa. In that age, men were automatically dedicated to pure devotional service from their very birth. And since everyone was perfect in all respects, the age was called Krita Yuga. The Vedas were then manifest in the form of the sacred syllable Om, and the Supreme Lord was perceived within the mind in the form of the four-legged bull of religion. There were no formalized process of sacrifice, and the sinless people, who were naturally inclined to austerity, simply engaged in meditation on the personal form of the Lord. In the following age, Treta Yuga, there became manifest from the heart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the three Vedas, and from them the three forms of the sacrificial fire. At that time, the system of four varnas and four ashramas, which prescribes material and spiritual duties for the different members of society, appeared from the bodily limbs of the Lord. According to how the social divisions took birth from higher and lower features of the Lord's body, it became endowed with higher and lower qualities. After this description, Lord Krishna explains the natures of persons in each of the four varnas, and of those who are outside the limits of the varnas. Well, see, we even get a mention. He also describes those qualities that pertain to humanity in general. Members of the higher orders are qualified to accept second birth. After receiving the sacred thread initiation, they should go live in the Gurukula, the home of the spiritual master. With a pacified mind, the student, brahmachari, should absorb himself in study of the Vedas. He should keep matted hair and is forbidden to wash his teeth, prepare a nice seat for himself, talk when bathing or evacuating, cut his hair and nail, or at any time pass semen. He must regularly perform worship at the three junctures of the day and must render devotional service to his spiritual master in a spirit free from envy. The brahmachari must offer to the guru whatever food and other things he obtains by begging. He accepts for his maintenance whatever remnants of the Lord he has granted. He should render menial service to the spiritual master by massaging his feet and worshipping him, and should avoid all sense gratification and strictly maintain the vow of celibacy. With his mind, body, and words, he should worship the Supreme Lord in the form of the Supersoul, in the way prescribed for him. Right, because everybody has what's prescribed for them. So this is the brahmacharis, this is what they're doing. Then grihastha, everybody has what's prescribed. For brahmacharis, seeing or touching women and conversations or sports in the company of women are absolutely disallowed. Cleanliness and ritual purification by water should be observed by members of all the spiritual orders of society. Right? Because they're just doing certain things that then it makes it they're not specifically attractive. Not that they're not clean. Their clothes are clean. They're taking the baths or washing their clothes. They're doing all these things. They're just not doing anything that might make them look attractive. Yes. Right? We also have to remember they live in the forest. Right? So there's no one there to impress anyway. The monkeys really don't care. Right? Yeah. Everyone is also advised to always remember that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Soul dwelling within the hearts of all. So these things, that cleanliness, ritual purification, and always remembering the Lord, that all orders, all aspects of Varnashram are supposed to be doing. That's why it's a Daiva Varnashram system.
Actually, in the last page, it said that the Brahmachari forbidden to wash his teeth. Why?
Yeah, he doesn't brush his teeth. It doesn't mean he doesn't wash his mouth.
Okay. But
I mean, we'll see some details here because we have to remember is that means if those who are following the culture then give the synopsis, then they might bring out other points.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of what they see or understand. Because just let's say, like, for example, when you get up in the morning, and you go, you know, you're going to start your process of bathing and all that. Before you even start with brushing your teeth and that, you're supposed to rinse your mouth 10 times. Because anything left over, this or that, because when you brush your teeth, those things, it might be swallowed. So you're rinsing 10 times. Then after that, you're supposed to then, you know, that means 3 times gargle and that. So a total of 10. The other is that then you, gargle 3 times after you've brushed your teeth. And then rinse your mouth 12 times. Or some just say, you know, take 16 times and you do however many of the balance you want. You know, the difference is 15 or 16. You know what I'm saying? So the point is when you're doing these things, then you'll see that they, you maintain. Where you have people, they brush their teeth and then just spit it out and maybe rinse once or something like that.
Yes.
Then, you know, if they didn't brush their teeth, they'd have problems.
Yes.
You know, and if after eating all you do is put your finger in the bowl with the thing and then take your handkerchief and like that and you're done, then, you have to brush your teeth. The other thing is what are they eating? They're eating really simple, so there's nothing to cause any problem for that.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And we're also seeing is that this goes back in the ages. Madhvacharya's students, the brahmacharis there, they used the neem twigs.
Yes. Yes.
But in that, they just use them straight, regular. Means as they are. You just, you know, the twig is cut and then you use it and brush your teeth.
Yes. Yes.
And from that, it'll make your teeth very white.
Mm-hmm.
There's somebody who had visited in their diary, whatever it was, they mentioned this point that the teeth of the brahmacharis at the Madhva ashram, they look like pearls because they were so white. You know? Does that make sense? So it's because somehow the neem then does that.
Okay.
But otherwise, grihasthas will take them and soak them in I think sandalwood and there's maybe cow urine, all kinds of stuff, all these various medicinals and flavorful and all that, and then they'll use them. So the brahmacharya, so even if it just says that, they just use that.
Yes.
You know, because like when it says sleeping on the floor, we'll take that means directly on the floor, nothing. What it means is there's no wooden bed.
Yes.
It's just whatever you're sleeping on, the mattress or that, is straight on the floor.
Yes.
If it says sleeping on the stone, that means nothing.
Okay. Yes.
Does that make sense? So when it said before, the brahmacharis just sleep on the ground, that may be directly on the ground or it may be on a mat.
Yes.
But because of the brahmatejas, they don't feel cold.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yes. Yeah. So we'll have to see exactly what detail Krishna is going to bring out here. You know, because otherwise, just like eating uncooked food, what does that mean in the Veda? It means it's not cooked in ghee.
Yes, yes.
But we'll interpret that to mean it's raw food.
Yes.
No. Raw food's another thing. It's called raw food.
Yes.
Uncooked simply means it's not cooked in ghee. Like rice, you boil it, and then afterwards you put ghee. Or chapatis, you cook them, then afterwards
yes.
you put ghee.
Yes.
You know, dal, you boil that, and afterwards you put
yes.
ghee.
Yes.
You know, you can do the same with the salt. Like Prabhupada would steam his vegetables and then make a chaunce.
Mm-hmm.
So what he was eating, his rice, dal, sabji, and chapatis, that was all uncooked.
Yes.
Does that make sense? And then cooked would be like a paratha or a puri,
mm-hmm.
you know, pushpana. Does
yes.
that make sense? Mm-hmm. That would mean cooked. So when it says they fed the Brahmins, you know, cooked food, then it means, you know, nice, it's like festival food.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But otherwise, then uncooked means what you would eat daily.
Mm-hmm.
So people would eat daily uncooked. And on, you know, once a week or special occasions or when there's guests, then you make cooked food. Does that make sense? So it's a cultural thing. Unless this is understood, it won't be caught. Because we have our interpretation what uncooked means.
Yes, yes.
You know.
So we need to change our past. Our perspective.
Yeah. Well, no, you can't change the past. You can deal with the present.
Yes.
See, a bright future. Yeah, because the past is, you know, it's just moved into the dream state, right? How you say? Just leaving a trail of vasanas, right? Yeah. So now you can create samskaras.
Yes.
Yes.
Positive.
Yes, positive. Done. Okay. After studying all the different aspects of the Vedas, a Brahmana who has material desires may take permission from his spiritual master and enter family life. Otherwise, if he has no material desire, he may become a vanaprastha or a sannyasi. Like you see a lot of those, it means in old paintings and that, you see all these sages and sadhus, you know, coming to visit the kings and stuff, or they're out in the forest and that. You'll see a lot of them wearing saffron, you know, with the peg shoes and the beards and the tied up hair and all that kind of stuff and like that. But at the same time, as you see that they're wearing dhotis. So they're actually vanaprasthas.
Okay.
Just without wife. So they just live their simple life because they're independent. Brahmacharis live in the ashram of the guru, but now they could either remain there, they could take sannyas, they could be vanaprast like this. Does that make sense?
But Maharaj, what is the difference for brahmachari to take to go to vanaprastha or to go to sannyas?
We generally just practice. They either just as a brahmachari go to sannyas because our brahmacharis anyway, especially the old ones, they move around, so they're like what would be before the vanaprasthas. Because the brahmachari technically means he's living in the ashram with the guru under the direction of the guru. But now we have so many brahmacharis, they move around, they do that. So technically, we call them brahmacharis, but by this definition, they'd be vanaprasthas.
Yes.
So they're in a senior position.
Yes.
So now we'll call them senior brahmacharis or other things like that. But actually, they'd be vanaprasthas.
Yes.
The proper order of succession should be followed in changing from one spiritual order to the next. One who wishes to enter the household order should accept a wife who is the same social class, who is not objectionable, but is somewhat younger in age than he. The obligatory rules of the three classes who are twice born, the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, are, okay, they're obligatory duties. Worship of the Lord, study of the Vedas, and giving charity. These three everybody must do. The occupational duties, accepting charity, teaching others, performing sacrifice for others, are the privilege of Brahmins alone. Like you see, Arjuna, when he was out traveling, when he was doing that 12 years, where he was, had gone out on pilgrimage, so he went with the Brahmins, and he would sit and do the yajna. All the Brahmins would be there and you know, make the arrangements and chant the mantras, but he would actually do it himself. Like you see, he sat for that. And that, you know, he was all ready, he went to take his bath, you know, and then he was going to come back and do the yajna, but when he took his bath, he ended up down in Nagaloka. you know, and when he came out of the water, then there was already a set up yagya. And since it was time to do yagya, he sat down and just did the yagya. Then having done the yagya, then Ulupi came. Right? You know, so doing your own yagyas and things like that, so your own study of the Vedas, you know, and of course giving in charity, that then all will do. But to accept charity, teach others, and perform sacrifice for others, those are the privilege of the Brahmins. Right? So we do see an example of, with Gotama. Gotama Rishi. Then, I think we discussed this story. The Gotama Rishi's, his son had gone to the Gurukul. And because of his, you know, he was very good, very intelligent, very qualified. But because of his pride, then his guru never taught him about transcendental, you know, topics. Because he was so absorbed in the material. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't know they existed. Mm-hmm. So then when he had gone, I'm not sure, with some others, they had gone to visit this one king who was very renowned for his, you know, favoring the Brahmins and discussions of, you know, spiritual topics and all that. Then when they sages came, and, you know, he, you know, understood who he was, he's the son of Gotama, he thought, okay, he'll have so much to say. So he asked him topics on spiritual. Mm-hmm. And because Gotama's son had never heard that even this topics exist, he thought he was goofing on them. He thought he was joking. So he got very upset and left. And then he went home and his father asked, well, how was it? You visited that king and this and that. And he was expecting him to, you know, he had very nice discussions and that. And he said, no, he asked me all these, you know, crazy questions and all that, you know, just where, you know, nonsensical questions. And Gotama was very surprised because he says this king was famous for being spiritually inclined, you know, and respecting Brahmins. So he said, what kind of questions did he ask? And so then the son repeated the questions. Gotama, from hearing the questions, could understand these weren't basic questions. These were questions of someone very advanced in the you know, the spiritual process.
Janaka.
Huh? That was Janaka Ras. So then Gotama and the other Brahmins who were with him, they went to his place because they understood he knows more than them.
Yes.
And they went taking firewood and all that and said, we've come to learn from you. He says, no, you're Brahmins, I'm a Kshatriya, I can't teach you.
Yes.
He says, no, but you know, this transcendental topic you have. He says, you can be my guest and whatever I know I'll teach you. But it won't be in this formal, I'm the teacher, you're the student.
Yes.
All like that. So in other words, he'll teach, but it's not a formal thing where he'll get remuneration or any benefits or respect as a teacher.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Because everybody's going to teach. But as Brahmins, it's an occupation. The others, it's just, you know, something that you do. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So Kshatriya then administrates as an occupation. Vaishya does, you know, business or the cows or land as an occupation.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean he doesn't teach someone something.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. If a Brahmin considers that his consciousness is contaminated by engaging in these occupations, he may sustain his existence by collecting grains from the fields. Right? He feels it's just too much, you know, doing all these aspects of, so in other words, accepting charity, teaching others, performing sacrifice for others. He finds it's just because people are too materialistic or this or that, even though it's all pious, but he finds it contaminating because of his particular platform elevation. Then he can exist by collecting grains from the field, Rita. If he's disturbed by poverty, the Brahmin may out of necessity accept the business of a Kshatriya Vaishya. That means if he can't perform duties.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're not available. But he should never take the occupation of a Shudra. Right? In a similar situation, a Kshatriya may take the occupation of Vaishya and a Vaishya that of a Shudra. But when the emergency is past, it is not fitting to continue earning one's living by a lower occupation.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as if the opportunity is not there, then you do whatever you can. But as soon as it is, you should go back to it. Because if you don't, then technically the king can have you reclassify yourself and now you take up. Like, let's say the Brahmin's taken up business. Now he can, the opportunity to do Brahminical activities as an occupation has come back. He'd rather do business. So then, according to the rule, he'll now have to identify himself as a Vaishya, not a Brahmin. Right? Because he can do brahminical things. As long as it's not available, no one should complain. But when it is, then he should perform that. Does that make sense?
Okay. And Maharaj, this is a kshatriya who is decided.
He's the king. He's doing enforcement. I mean, it may be under the direction of the Brahmins, but the point is, enforcing comes from the kshatriyas. That's what administration is for. Right? A Brahmin who is properly fixed in his personal duty rejects all insignificant material desires, always serves the Vaishnavas, and is under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? So these are duties. Generally, we don't talk about those. We talk about planting carrots, you know, like that, cows, and I think that's about it, right? We covered it, yeah.
Land,
well, that's where the carrots come in. Like that. You know, unless from your you know, Europe, then it may be cabbages. But if you're America, it's carrots. Nobody likes pumpkins, so don't even bring that up. Right? So you can see it's all these qualities and control. These are all part of the duties. A Brahmin who is properly fixed in his personal duty rejects all insignificant material desires, always serves the Vaishnavas, and is under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The householder should study the Vedas every day and maintain his wards with money honestly earned by his own occupation. As far as possible, right, so Ajamiya wasn't exactly following that, right, yeah. As far as possible, he should execute worship of the Lord by ritual sacrifices, remaining unattached to material life and fixed in devotion to the Supreme Lord. The householder may finally take the order of Vanaprastha so he can fully involve himself in the Lord's worship. If he has a grown son, he may directly take the renounced order of sannyas. Right, so in other words, the family should be taken care of. So if the son will take care of it, then he can take sannyas. If not, then he takes care until such time as all this can happen. If there is no son, then he just, like you see, Dhritarashtra, then he and Gandhari, they went to the forest together.
Yes.
Right? And since Kunti was also staying with them, she also went along.
Yes.
Because, you know, they didn't have... I mean, Kunti went just to, you know... At that time, she was eating once a month. Like that. So, she was ready to go. Right? So, but Gandhari, she had no sons.
Yes.
Otherwise, she could either go with her husband as Vanaprastha or stay in the house with the son. Like that. So,
Maharaj, you said a little before that the householder should study the Veda every day.
Yes.
So, it means householder means Brahmana Kshatriya Vaishya, this tree.
Yes. Yeah, because that's what because it says the obligatory duties of the three classes.
Yes.
So, one of study of the Vedas.
Yes.
Right? So, worship of the Lord is mentioned about giving charity so they can receive charity. Right? And they perform sacrifice and teach others. So that was mentioned. So it is about them. Now, if someone who is a Shudra also then studies the Shastra. Like for us, study the Veda means studying Bhagavatam, Gita, like that. So if someone does that, that's very good. So Vaishnavas, they do that. But the direct study of the Vedas, that just the Brahmins would do. Because that means going over reciting the verses and all that because of the tones and all that. So other than the twice born, they wouldn't do that.
Study the Veda under the Brahmana for the other one.
No. Means study the Vedas means either directly the Vedas or those in pursuance of the Vedic version.
Yes.
Right? So for us, that means Bhagavatam, yes. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, Nectar Devotion, like this.
Yes.
So that, for us, everyone can do because everybody by ashram is Brahmin. Right? So as part of our sadhana, we're doing that. But it's saying here, as a Brahmin, part of his occupational duty is he has to study the Veda.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
We're studying it as ashram.
Yes.
Because as Veda, then that means the Veda means as Varna, then that means the Veda itself, the rituals themselves, how to do, what is the explanation, what's the technique and all that. So, you know, who's doing that? Except for a few devotees. Like you say, you have, you know, sometimes in one region of the world, you'll have one or two devotees that do this. And so anytime these things are there, they'll call them from, you know, does that make sense? So you have a handful of them in the world that they just they do all these things. You know, you're having a wedding, they do them. You're doing a samskar, they do them. You're opening a temple, they do them. It's always the same individuals. Like that. So that's what we mean here, is that before more was going on, so more Brahmins could be involved. Right? Because now there's not enough going on, so they have to work at Tesco's. Right? That's the whole point. Right? So before they'd study the Vedas. But for us, that generic aspect study of Vedas means the devotional scriptures. But otherwise, as an occupation, the Brahmana means, study the Vedas means the actual Veda and the Brahmanas and the application of those to be able to perform sacrifice for others. Does that make sense? Because in doing this, you can't have one syllable wrong. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing, is that it has to be correct.
Yeah. Maharaj, in Varnashramali, when Brahmana, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they were supposed to study the Vedas. So then Shudras, which books did they study? Then, that
Puranas, mainly.
Puranas. Yeah.
It's interesting that the studies of the Veda is a privilege for the Brahmanas, but it's made in such a way that actually others are not really interested in this.
No.
Unless it's political.
Yeah, it's just like this. Other than a Kshatriya, is anybody else interested in getting their head cut off? No. You know, other than a Vaishya, is anyone else interested in losing all their money in a new business deal? No. Right? And other than a Shudra, are you interested to get up on a stage in front of everybody and sing? You know?
Like
a
dance.
Yeah, dance, get out your hat and cane, and, you know, do the whole thing, you know. Yeah, so the whole point is that's the Varnashram thing. No one else wants to actually do that. Like that. So that's the thing.
But that's only if they think about their obligations. And they think about rights. Everybody wants to
do everything. But the thing is, here he says everyone wants the position of the Brahmin, but does anyone want to study the Vedas and live just by receiving charity from whatever they do and teaching and like that? No. And then it says here they have to maintain worship of the Lord. They have to have all these, you know, proper qualities like that. So he must just, you know. So that's the thing. It's a package. And so you take the package, it works. You know, it's that's, but we don't like taking the package.
Italia.
Yeah. Like how you say, like madukari, you know, like the bee taking the essence, the honey from everywhere, like that. But not necessarily just a little bit, not how much we can get out of it, right? You know, like that. Okay, if he has a grown son, he may directly take the renounced order of sannyas. But persons who are excessively lusty after women, who have no proper discrimination, and who are extremely attached to wealth and possessions, remain perpetually in anxiety over the welfare of their family members, and are doomed to take their next birth in a lower species of life. Mm-hmm. Right? Right? How you say? Just a little bit before, just to make the context. Lord Krishna explains the natures of persons in each of the four varnas, and those who are outside the limits of the varnas. Yeah, so that last sentence, that was outside the varnas.
Honorable mention.
Yeah, honorable mention, or dishonorable mention. Yes. Shloka Anusharanam. Summary of verses. That was it. Shloka Anusharanam. That was it. 1 to 21, the Varnashram system, 22 to 38, the Brahmachari ashram, 39 to 58, the Grihastha ashram. Right, so Varnashram, then there's general things that is the principles of it, and that, then it'll get into detail. Verses 1 to 21, the Varnashram system. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord, previously you described the principles of devotional service that are practiced by followers of the Varnashram system, and even ordinary, unregulated human beings." Again, an honorable mention. Now, this is coming up twice. Ordinary, unregulated human beings. It's such a pleasant way of just saying Mleches and Yavin. Yeah. My dear lotus-eyed Lord, now please explain to me how all human beings can achieve loving service unto you by the execution of their prescribed duties. My dear Lord, O mighty armed one, previously in your form of Lord Hamsa, you spoke to Lord Brahma those religious principles that bring supreme happiness to the practitioner. My dear Madhava, now much time has passed, and that which you previously instructed will soon practically cease to exist. Right, because you have all the ages. This is at the end of Dwapara. Or this is after. I think it's already come into Kali, right? Because the war happened still in Dwapara. But it was right on the cusp. So you start to see the influence, the flavors. Because I think you have, depends. Sometimes they also take 500 years as the Sandhi. Right? It means 500 for here. Then it'll be, it depends how you're doing it. Whether you're using celestial years or using human years or like this. But there's a Sandhi in between where you'll have flavors of both. You know, that's why, you know, like you see like in the Bible, in the Old Testament, they're talking about within 5,000 years. Mm-hmm. But they're talking about people who are living 600, 900 years. Yes. Right? Because it's in that Sandhi between. You know? And then it comes down where it's just plain old Kali Yuga. Right?
In 12th Canto, it's explained that Kali entered when Draupadi was insulted. But then he couldn't spread his influence because Krishna was still around.
Still present. Okay.
When Krishna left.
Then he could. Okay. Okay, by spreading his influence, that means he entered at that time, so therefore the war and all that. But it was. So Kali got to do service for Krishna, right? Yeah. O subduer of the enemy, my dear Lord, Achyuta, there is no speaker, creator, and protector of supreme religious principles other than your Lordship, either on the earth or even the assembly of Lord Brahma, where the personified Vedas reside. Right? So in other words, what they're speaking is representing Krishna. Krishna is the speaker of the Vedas. He's the knower of Dharma. He's the knower of religious principles. And the others are simply repeating what he's given.
Yes.
Right? Because he's the one that reveals.
Yes.
Right? Thus, my dear Lord, Madhusudana, when you, who are the very creator, protector, and speaker of spiritual knowledge, abandon the earth, who will again speak this lost knowledge? Therefore, my Lord, since you are the knower of all religious principles, please describe to me the human beings who may execute the path of loving service to you, and how such service is to be rendered. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura writes, having heard Gyan, Bhakti, and Astanga Yoga from Krishna, Uddhava asked about Karma Yoga while reviewing what was previously explained in 7 verses. Right, so he went through what was discussed, right? Uddhava said, previously at the beginning of the Kalpa, you said, by the influence of time, the Vedic knowledge was lost at the time of annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke to Brahma, the Vedic knowledge in which Bhakti is the essence. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.3. That Dharma of Bhakti has 3 types, pure Bhakti, mixed Bhakti, and secondary Bhakti. Mm-hmm. Footnote 1. Mixed Bhakti means that Bhakti is more prominent than Gyan. Secondary Bhakti means that Gyan is more prominent than Bhakti. So is it Karma Mr. Bhakti or Bhakti Mr. Karma? Right? So like that. Pure bhakti arises in humans with or without varnashram by association with pure devotees. Mm-hmm. So someone can come to that platform of pure devotees.
Yes.
Even if they're following or understanding varnashram or not.
Yes.
Right? But that doesn't mean they complain against it. It's just that they are just engaged in service. They're not necessarily worried about it.
Yes.
Okay. With or without varnashram, bhakti arises in humans with or without varnashram by association with pure devotees, by good fortune. It does not arise from varnashram or other processes. That's important to note. We're recommending that someone follows varnashram, but we're never saying bhakti is the varnashram is a cause for bhakti or is necessary in bhakti.
Yes.
Bhakti is independent. But since you're trying, Why would we be interested in bhakti? I mean, in Varnashram. Right? Because we see is before Bhakti Vinod Thakur, then the Vaishnavs, whatever little is there in the culture, you know, when they interact with society or just the proper etiquette amongst themselves, like we see in Jiva Dharma. But how much Varnashram is going on there? Right? Not really much. Because they're all basically all acting on that platform as sannyas.
Yes.
You know, or actually even that more of like hamsa.
Yes.
Right? So they just are performing their devotional service, studying the scriptures, associating with devotees, chanting, like this. That's what they're doing, taking prasad. So Varnashram is important when you're dealing with this social system. So since the mission of Lord Chaitanya is to have, you know, every town and village, that means you have to have something that goes into town and village. You have to have Varnashram. Right? Interesting to note is that because of these things, that's why you need Varnashram. Because many who discuss Varnashram think it can only happen out in the village, and in the cities you can't have Varnashram. But then, are we actually going to try to say that Dwarka, they were not following Varnashram? You know? So that's the whole thing, is that once you bring in the social, then Varnashram becomes more important. Now, in the village, it'll be much more simple. So the more it becomes bigger, the more sophisticated, the more Varnashram has to be sophisticated to match. Couldn't tell if the people in the rickshaw were laughing or it's the boys in the gurukul behind them, because it happened at the same time. I was like, wow, okay, they're having fun. Right? Is that? Yeah. So it's very important that Varnashram is necessary when you're dealing in social, especially nowadays. Then community becomes a very important element within the, you know, expanding the preaching. That means you have to have Varnashram. To have community without Varnashram, that's like saying we're going to have music without using any notes. You know, we're going to make lunch without any ingredients. Oh, ingredients, that's ritualistic. We don't need ingredients. It's just, you know, we're devotees. We don't care for the rules. You know, it's like, what are you talking about? But it's important, but then it's pointed out, it does not arise, bhakti doesn't arise from that, just in case, because others say, well, without Varnashram, then the move can't go on, you can't develop in bhakti, you can't develop good, you're not going to... No, that doesn't have any... It just makes it easier. Right? You know, it's just like, would it be easier to have regular sadhana, let's say, if you lived inside a house? You know, an ashram, a temple, a house, or something. Yes. Or would it be easier if you're out on the street? Right? So, it's not that you can chant on the street, but it just makes it easier. But it's not that it's because you're in the house, that's why you can chant. No, you can chant anywhere. So Varnashram just makes it socially easier. And since the soul has a tendency to have a connection with karma, then that's there. Because remember when we were talking so much on just the gyan aspect, that detachment, then the question was brought up. Many devotees will find this impractical. They want something practical. This is the practical. Right? So, yeah.
I'm thinking that the difficulty is that those who are born outside of Varnashrama, they either very pro-Varnashrama or against Varnashrama.
Yeah,
the whole discussion happens between people. They have no idea about Varnashrama.
No, but they do have one common point of discussion. It's called Niyamagraha. Like that. You have to be able to explain how it connects to devotional service, how it supports, or how it's against devotional service. Right? Because there are aspects of Varnashram we're not interested in. Right? They're bona fide. It's just that we, as we advance, they aren't so important. Not that we may not use them, but as we advance, then we find that they're not so necessary. You know, like Kamyaka, you know, aspects. They're not so necessary. Some sense, you know, or worrying about the forefathers or this or that. Now, devotees might, if they live in a big family, they're the only devotee and everybody else is, you know, not so much. Then Shraddha rites are done or this or that, only because it's the family thing, but they themselves don't require it. But if they're on their own, they wouldn't need to do it. Like that. Yeah, so the things that we talk about that the devotee drops from the Varnashram system, Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas have already dropped it for us. So what we're getting is the already dropped form. Now we try to apply that, oh, we drop that on what we've been given. No, we've already been given the essence. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. What did it? But yes, that's the difficulty. So that's why it has to be discussed in the context of how the culture actually connects to Krishna. Otherwise, it just becomes a pious activity. So, other than Krishna likes cows, that's the only part about, you know, protecting the cows where it's connected to Krishna. And it's just all this and that and good for this and good for that and so many things like that. So it just becomes a karma thing. All the benefits. And they'll say, well, without this, people aren't interested. No, it's because why not with bhakti? Like that. Because the point of the milk is that you drink milk, it develops the finer brain tissues, which then you can use in Krishna consciousness. Why not that? Why do we have to get into everything else? And if you are getting into everything else, then that'll protect the cows. Great. But understand that there are gradations. Right. So, okay.
That's why
Prabhupada wanted us to study. Like it said before, studying the scriptures is a daily activity. You have said, I cannot be attained by intense efforts of yoga, shankhya, charity, vows, austerity, sacrifices, explaining the Vedas, study of the Vedas, or sannyas. 11:12:9. So we see it's the same flavor Prahlad Maharaj was saying. By all these different aspects, then it's not. Okay, here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Right? Prahlad Maharaj gives 12 different aspects of religion. Throw in a few more. Right? And other places they'll mention 20. Like that. But the point is that these cannot be attained. Krishna can't be attained. Bhakti can't be attained by these. These can be engaged in service to Krishna, but they themselves won't produce. Just like the pot does not produce cooked items. It's you, a conscious individual, performing the activities of cooking. The pot's used, but it's not the pot that produces the food. Right? Does that make sense? Because you can take the eggplant and just put it straight on the fire and hari bol. Mix a little mustard oil and you're good. Right? Potatoes also. Right? We're in Bengal, so I gave the Bengali one. Got one smile. As soon as I mentioned about that, one guy, yes, good. Okay. Mixed bhakti arises. Mixed bhakti and secondary bhakti arise from one's dharma and from association with persons with mixed bhakti or secondary bhakti. Right? So they come from performing your duties, right? And so there may be an attachment there, so it brings in that aspect, or from associating those who perform mixed bhakti or secondary bhakti, right? So it can either be because that's the situation you're in or because you associate with people who are like that, even though you may not need to do that. How mixed and secondary bhakti arises, you alone know. Bhakti in verse 2 refers to mixed and secondary bhakti. Verse 2. Okay, that means, my dear Lotus-eyed Lord, now please explain to me how all human beings can achieve loving service unto you by the execution of their prescribed duties. Right? Because if you're attached to the duties in that position, then it's mixed bhakti. If you come to the point of surrender, then it's not mixed. It can be pure bhakti. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Sri Uddhava, the best of devotees, thus inquired from the Lord. Hearing his question, this personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, was pleased, and for the welfare of all conditioned souls, spoke those religious principles that are eternal. Right, so this will be Nitya Dharma. In this verse, Dharman Aha Sanatanan indicates that the following descriptions spoken by Sri Krishna are eternal principles. That's, you're watching here? That would be where you put that. Yeah. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, your question is faithful to religious principles, and thus gives rise to the highest perfection in life, pure devotional service, for both ordinary human beings and the followers of the Varnashram system." Right? So this will give the pure devotees and ordinary human beings and followers of the Varnashram. So when we say ordinary human beings, means those who aren't following Varnashram.
Yes.
And then we say followers of Varnashram, but point is devotional service will work for everyone and can bring them to the platform of highest perfection in life, pure devotional service.
Yes.
Now, please learn from me those supreme religious principles. Right? They're supreme because they're above other religious principles. In the beginning, in Satyayuga, there was only one class called Hamsa, to which all human beings belong. In that age, all people are unalloyed devotees of the Lord from birth. And thus learned scholars call this first age Krita Yuga, or the age in which all religious duties are perfectly fulfilled. So that's why it's called Krita. Right?
Krita means perfection. Krita means perfection.
It seems religious duties are perfectly fulfilled. So Krita. In Satyayuga, the undivided Veda is expressed by the syllabic Om. Right? So the Veda doesn't have to be divided into four because people can study the whole thing and understand the essence of the whole thing because they understand pure devotion. So they can see it all in that context of Krishna so they don't get lost in the volume of knowledge. Right? But you have to have that core aspect of it's all about Krishna and pure devotion. Only then can the Veda be undivided, and you study it, and you'll see it in that context.
Yes, yes.
Right? And I am the only object of mental activities. So anything, any activity of the mind, they're always going to be seeing whatever it is coming in from the senses in connection with the Lord. Right? I become manifest as the four-legged bull of religion. And thus the inhabitants of Satyayuga, fixed in austerity and free from all sins, worship me as Lord Hamsa. Right? Because he says the four-legged bull of religion. Because in the Treta, then it's three-legged bull of religion. Right? And so Hamsa, he's the, he's the main, he's the avatar. Right? Because he's white. Satyayuga's avatar is white, Hamsa, and we saw before his instructions.
Yes.
So we can see it's four people who are living on this platform.
Yes.
Right? With that knowledge, you apply it to whatever level you're functioning at, and then it will raise you to that level.
Mm.
But just that itself, for them, is their sadhana, is their lifestyle, is their practice.
Mm.
So greatly fortunate one, at the beginning of Treta Yuga, Vedic knowledge appeared from my heart, which is the abode of the air of life, in three divisions, as Rik, Sama, and Yajur. Then, from that knowledge, I appeared as threefold sacrifice. Because then you divide it. You have the Riks, that's why it's called Rig Veda. Sama is the Samans, or the songs.
Mm-hmm.
And Yajur is the prose.
Okay.
That. Then, from that knowledge, I appeared as threefold sacrifice. So Rick is the main, because considered the senior one, because of all the verses of all the Vedas go back to Rick's. There's an original verse, and then from that, the different Vedas may have other aspects. So Rig Veda is just Rick's. And then other Vedas will have a Rick, and then from there, then they'll expand some things on it. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. But Krishna says, of the three, he's Saman. Because that's Prayojan. It's about glorifying the Lord. Yeah. Then, from that knowledge, I appeared as threefold sacrifice. In Treta Yuga, the four social orders were manifested from the universal form of the personality of Godhead. See, before that, they were all Hamsa, so you didn't need. The Brahmanas appeared from the Lord's face, the Kshatriyas from the Lord's arms, the Vaishyas from the Lord's thighs, and the Shudras from the legs of that mighty form. Right, so that's why you don't say, oh, this one's better than that. It's just everybody has their duties, and there's a hierarchy. But as far as the individual practicing, you don't have to make a distinction. Like that. Does that make sense? Because it's all part of the Lord. You don't say, it's his feet, that's the lowest, so we don't care about his feet. We only care about his head. Right? So in the Vedic system, they don't have to make that. You make it on occupational because then you know who does what.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like in a car. Someone is driving. Mm-hmm. Right? If everybody's driving, then what happens? Right? Yeah. Each social division was recognized by its particular duties and behavior. That's how you would see it. It's not by birth. It's by the duties and behavior, right? Karma and guna and karma. The married order of life appeared from the loins of my universal form, right? So then when you go over to the ashrams, then you see they also match. And the celibate students came from my heart. The forest dwelling retired order of life appeared from my chest. And the renounced order was situated within the head of the universal form. Sometimes the brahmacharis are mentioned as the feet.
Yes.
Right? Because they're what's the basis of the whole society. Someone's trained in the principles of Krishna consciousness and that, then they can become a householder, vanaprastha, sannyasa, and it'll work. Without that training, they can't. But, so it appears that means you have two aspects. That just being trained in that, then that may be the feet. Those who then remain in that position or committed to that, they are the heart.
Yes.
Well, then those who graduate, then they go on to become the thighs because they become grihasthas.
Yes.
Then they go on to become the chest because that's what protects the society. Right? The vanaprasthas, they protect the society in that they give the directions. Right? Mm-hmm. You can't tell a vanaprastha, means, you know, here what's coming, especially if they come up from grihastha. The vanaprastha is telling the young grihastha, you know, you should do like this or that or things like that. It'll make it easier for you. They can't say, well, what do you know? You're a vanaprastha, right? They can't say that. So, therefore, they're the chest, you know. Like that. And the renounced order was situated within the head of my universal form. The various occupation and social divisions of human society appeared according to inferior and superior natures, manifest in the situation of an individual's birth. Another aspect of the heart means because that's the basis of it. They're detached, they're function, they're serving under guru and all that, so that's actually how the disciple sees themselves. Because you see also that, I think it's in, what was the king? Not Mandata, not Mandalibhadra. The queen was Vidarbha.
Malayadwaj,
yes. So when he left his body, then in the purport there, it probably goes back and forth between talking about the teacher and student, husband and wife, and guru and disciple. Right? So that basis of that, learning that is the, in the brahmachari ashram, then that you could say also is the heart, because that's the principle on which the devotional service is based. So then you could include all brahmacharis then, right? So they say, yeah. The various occupational and social divisions of human society appeared according to inferior and superior natures, manifested in the situation of the individual's birth. Right? So it means their consciousness in that, that's how they're situated. But it's not, it's by the qualities that they have. Right? So it's by guna and karma. So at birth, whatever's their guna and karma, that's then how you situate them. It's not that what their parents are, that's how you situate them. Right? It means naturally, because they have to be brought up by the parents, they'll be brought up according to that order that the parents are. Because there's generally a chance, generally the standard is if the parents are equally matched. Like you have two kshatriyas, they'll give birth to a kshatriya.
Yes.
Right? But if they're not, there's mixed, then the child may be mixed. So what they're going to take, that you have to see.
Yes.
So they'll raise them as in the kshatriya environment, then whether they take it up or not. Like you see Rishabhdev, then, how many was it? 80 of his sons. They became Brahmins.
Yes.
Like that. They would have grown up in, you know, the palace and that kind of shit, but they became Brahmins. And then 9 became Paramahamsas, the Navayogendras that we met.
Yes.
And then 11 actually became No, it was 11. No, was it? Not the Yugendras. No, it had to be 9. 11 became Kshatriyas. Okay. But then there's the thing is, then they took up the different Dweebas, and so I'm not sure what happened to the other 5 that they did. No? Yes? No. Okay. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur remarks, the natures, low or high, appeared according to lower or high place of birth on the body of the universal form. Thus, the face and head, being the highest place in the body, produce the highest natures of Brahmins and Sannyasis. Since the feet and loins are the lowest portion of the body, they produce natures of Shudras and Grihasthas. Sri Krishna continued, but because it's universal form, then it's all in connection with Krishna. So any position is viable for developing love for Krishna. So that's the whole point. You're absorbed in the Lord, that's what is there. But the qualities of what work you do, that will be different. Right? Does that make sense? The Brahmins, then, one, they will have very short nails, and there'll be nothing under their nails, and if they do have anything under their nails, it's generally ash. Right? Kshatriyas might have blood under their nails. Vaishyas will have dirt under their nails from growing carrots. Right? Does that make sense? So, that's how you tell the difference. Check their nails. Right? Krishna...
And the, can we point out the main problem why the varnashram? I mean, why we are so adamantly against varnashram?
Nobody wants to be lower than the Shudra.
Prestige.
Prestige. Yeah. Because what the point is that devotees are worried they'll be the Shudra, but actually that's not the problem. That's pretty good. Because we have to remember is that the universal form, those four, it's on the form of the Lord. Outside of that means it's outside of that form of the Lord. Like that. So Shudra's looking good. Right? So, yeah, it's basically prestige. And also just who controls, because it's like you want to have control. So then the Brahmins are the top, so you want to be the Brahmin. But when you figure out, well, Brahmins aren't actually the administrative control, they don't want to be Kshatriyas. But then they're not actually the ones in the economics, so then you want to be a Vaishya. Right? But then you're restricted by all these things and all that. You want a little more freedom, so you want to be ordinary or be a Shudra. Right? So that's the Madhukari. You know, going out and picking whatever we like. That's the difficulty, because it's all about what will gain and safety. So whatever, you just take your occupation, and whatever will come will come. Even you try changing around, it doesn't change. It's just like if you're doing something and it has a repetitive nature, you follow a pattern, then if the pattern's right, you'll always make profit.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Like, let's say on the stock market, there's certain patterns are there. If it's certain patterns you buy and certain patterns you sell, generally speaking, a minimum 40 but up to 60%, you'll make profit if you strictly follow your pattern. But what happens is, this time it worked, great. The next time it worked, next time it didn't work. So now we change it. Well, if we had just followed it, the next time it would have worked again. And so then we keep changing around, trying to find this and that, then we end up with not a whole lot. You understand? So it's just, you perform your duty, you will get what you're supposed to get. It doesn't matter what you're doing. Does that make sense? You work down at the, you work down at the law, office like that, or you work down at the Tesco's, you'll actually, in your maintenance, end up with the same facilities. One will say that's not possible, but it will work out that way. Because you work at the other thing, you make so much more money, and then someone else makes politics, gets you thrown out, and because you're at such a high-level job, you can't get another job. You lose your job at this Tesco's, you go over to the next one, and within a week you got a new job. Those guys, it'll take them 6 to 9 months or a year to find a new job. Now, where does all that money go? right? Because also you're spending more money because of your lifestyle. So you, at the end of the day, you end up with the same amount. People don't catch that. You know, so the point is if you do your duties, Krishna's pleased, you'll get whatever you require. But because we want more, then we want to be able to get the benefit from everywhere. You know, it's like the guy, what, like, one reporter was asking the guy who was, I'm not sure where he was, maybe at Bonneville Salt Flats. You've heard of Bonneville Salt Flats? It's a place out in Utah. It's a natural place where it's salt water. But it's not very deep, so I think a good portion of the year stuff, it dries up. So it's this, because it was water and it just slowly dries up, it's this perfectly flat salt. So it's hard and smooth and it goes on and on and on for, you know, a huge amount of time. So all the world speed records they do there. Right? So this one guy had attached a rocket to his motorcycle. You know, just riding the motorcycle anyway is crazy, let alone attaching a rocket. Right? So then the reporter asked him, why does he do it? He says, because I can. Right? That's it. So, how you say? That's the American way. Yes. Okay. So then it's because we can take this, we can take that. Why we wouldn't? So then, therefore, those outside Varnashram. They don't want to follow the gunas or the qualities there. They don't want to follow the duties. They just want to do whatever they want. Like that. And for them, they think it's better. It's just like the feral animal. They like it outside, even though it's not necessarily as nice. They think it's, you know, nicer. Because, you know, being in the house is more restricted and this and that. And, you know, it's just like if you're outside, do you have to scratch on the door to go outside to go to the toilet? No. You just, anywhere you like. You know, so it's like that. You have, you know. So it's just seen as that not following, one feels one has more freedom. When actually we are more bound by the modes of nature. But you follow, that's why Krishna says, the regulated principles of freedom.
Yes.
So you follow it, the modes of nature, because you're now being bound, controlled by goodness, then the anxiety and all these things is less.
Yes.
But because of that, it's being peaceful and all that, we don't see that you're getting great profit. Because you don't really care, even if you get it. While in the mode of passion you get it, you feel so much better. So then people take that chance. And house always wins. Right? Right? So. Yes? Not sure that we finished our point, but we ended up somewhere, right? Yeah, so it's just that just because I can do it, that's all. Because otherwise restriction is like, no. That's why we've taken up the modern lifestyle is for that freedom, right? You know, blame it on the French. They're the ones that said, you know, liberty, fraternity, equity, like that. Yes, you know, like that.
But the result is not so good.
No, it's not. It's not as ideal as you'd want, you know.
No.
No, it's not as good, right? Yeah. Yes.
I think as soon as they pronounce that formula, then everybody...
That Mahavakya.
Mahavakya, yeah. Then everybody went to the level of Shudra, because the whole structure was destroyed, you know, after that.
Yeah, because I think it started with Louis the 14th. Instead of being, he's the king. He's known as the king, but he was the first citizen. That was that unique thing, is that even though he's the king, he's just the lead citizen out of there. Maybe for life, you know, but it's that. And so therefore he's working for the benefit of the state. So that whole concept came out of there. And for him it worked, because then everyone invests in it and everything. Because if he's just the king, he has to get it together by his taxes. But if it's the state, Now everybody can invest in that, and then that's how he expanded the empire and actually made the French Empire. Mm-hmm. Like before that, they were just a kingdom. Big kingdom, but just a kingdom. But when he did that, then that's where he expanded. So you can see as you can, the arta aspect goes more. So you're dropping it actually from that kind of kshatriya and the nobility down into the vaishya. So that's why then he was able to pull it off and everybody's making profit, so everyone's cool. But then Louis and the 16th, he couldn't. And so now everyone's suffering. And so then, since it's all being powered by all these, the bourgeois anyway, then why they shouldn't have the authority? You know? And then when they, but the bourgeois, how many of them are there? There's more of them than there are the nobility. But still, it's not enough, and, you know, the nobility has swords and they don't. So, you know. You know, is that a sense? You know, they could hit you with a carrot or something, but you know, but it's not going to be quite as effective. So they go to the people.
Yes.
You know, so therefore you get the we, the people, right? And so then, like you said, it drops the whole thing down to Shudra. So the whole thing is in consideration of the Shudras, and then the Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmins have to somehow or another eke out an existence, or keep it very quiet what they're doing. Like, you know, like the government controls everything, but they keep it quiet, so it's, like, yeah. You know, the business, as long as you don't know about it, then who cares? You know? But, you know. So it's, that's the difficulty with these things. That's why it's not recommended that these are the systems used. Better use Varnashram. It defines what everybody does, what the character and qualities that are required, then you get some standard. Right, because it said just who the people by popular vote. It doesn't say he has to have good qualities, but a kshatriya means you have to have good qualities, otherwise you can't be the leader of the society. But the modern is that if the people vote for him, then he's in, and that if they don't like him, it's their fault. So, you know, so that's the problem. And but the bottom line of the whole real difficulty is lack of control of the senses and lack of Krishna consciousness. So if somebody understands everything's Krishna's, it belongs to Krishna, he's controlling it, then we work in line with him. Ishavashamidam sarvam. Right? So then it works. Then you can make it work. Because otherwise, trying to run Varnashram without its direct connection to Krishna consciousness won't give a good result either. Otherwise, we see, we try to do farms or this or that, but it's about the farming. It's not about the devotional service. Because devotional service will be inspiring to everybody. How many people is farming, you know, actual day in, day out farming, attractive to? You know what I'm saying? Having a little herb garden out in your backyard, cool, many people can get into that. But actually, you live off of that. That's a whole different thing, right? I mean, yeah, because the point is that, you know, you grow some lettuce and then, you know, it's there for whatever it is, 2 weeks or a month, and when it runs out, then you go down to the shop, right? It's his business to work out where the lettuce comes from. No? Yeah. Okay. Yes? We can see. Still haven't lost that fire for Varnashram. Right? Even though we're right in the middle of all this Paramahamsa talk, then we Varnashram. Yeah, we're back. Okay. Okay.
And we have a few chapters.
Yeah, we have a few chapters. So I was just thinking, wow, we're going so fast. You know, 15 pages and that and this and that. Now we're getting this.
Something we can relate.
Yes, that's the whole point. It's a guna and karma, right? You know, here it is. Okay.
Otherwise, hamsters is a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Nice birds, great birds. Sri Krishna continued. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, cleanliness, satisfaction, tolerance, simple straightforwardness, devotion to me, mercy, and truthfulness are the natural qualities of the Brahmins. We're starting to see the problem here. You're asking why no one wants to follow? Dynamic power, no. Bodily strength.
There is a good thing, devotion to me.
Yeah. Various hermeneutical viewpoints you could have. Yeah. So then, dynamic power, bodily strength, determination, heroism, tolerance, right? That's not going to go down, right? Generosity, really not going to go down. Great endeavor, you know, great meeting. Steadiness, ooh, then what about the political? Devotion to the Brahmins, oh, forget it. And leadership, no, management, not leadership, are the natural qualities of the Kshatriyas, okay? Okay? Okay, that says it all, right? Mm-hmm. Now here's some fun. Faith in Vedic civilization, right? Dedication to charity. Freedom from hypocrisy. Service to the Brahmins and perpetually desiring to accumulate more money that are the natural qualities of the Vaishya. Okay, the last one we can relate to. But those first ones, I don't know. Okay. What's the connection? Yeah. Because the point is the Vedic system, because it's, do you make profit from piety or impiety?
Piety.
Right, means in the long run. Yeah. We have to look at, we're the soul, not the body, right? You know? So that means, and so then where's that defined? In the Vedic civilization. So if you don't follow that, it won't work. Right, so that's why religion is followed, is very much appreciated by the Vaishya class, because it will give profit. It has to. So if they don't have faith in that, then what? Then what's going to generate your money? Because it's not the business; it's the piety by which you perform it. Right? Does that make sense? Dedication to charity, because as the last one, accumulate more money. Right, because it's supposed to be. They accumulate more than they require. So what does that mean? You have more than you require, so you must be dedicated to charity. Otherwise, they'll try to keep it all, and then there's not enough money. Right? Just like the Brahmins, you know, are dealing with all the knowledge, the Kshatriyas with all the administration, the Vaishyas deal with all the money. So they're going to pay taxes and duties and these things to the Kshatriyas. They're going to take care of their family and dependents, you know, workers and everything like that. And they're going to give charity to the Brahmins and to the needy. So in this way, they're still going to end up with a ridiculous amount of money. But it's less ridiculous than they would like it to be. Right? So that's the whole point, is that then it has to go. Service without duplicity to the Brahmins, cows, demigods, and other worshipable personalities, and complete satisfaction with whatever income is obtained in such service, are the natural qualities of the Shudras, right? But that's, how did unions make money? By the Shudras not being satisfied with whatever income they have. Like that. So that's the whole thing, you break that down, and you have to break down that they respect those who are above them. So, yeah. Okay, now no. I say, now our moment in the sun, right? Dirtiness, dishonesty, thievery, faithlessness, useless quarrel, lust, anger, and hankering constitute the nature of those in the lowest position outside the Varnashram system. That one makes sense. Okay. Non-violence, truthfulness, honesty, desire for happiness and welfare of all others, and freedom from lust, anger, and greed constitute duties for all members of society. So all those within the Varnashram should have this. Yeah, desire for the happiness and welfare of others, according to the system. Shri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. Though it says that these are the common rules for all varnas, it also means that those outside the varnas should follow these rules. So if they follow, then it will work amongst themselves. Even though they may have so many of these things, lust, anger, greed, they should be working on it. Otherwise, even their own social system won't work, and they'll have difficulty interacting with those within the Varnashram system. Right? Because without these, then how will they get along?
Right? Will the people in the Varnashram system interact with these kind of people who are outside Varnashram?
Yeah, yeah. Where do you get all the stuff from the forest? means you have the people in the villages, the cities like this, but you also have those people that they just live out in the forest and they have their own scene. With that. Or they may have their own villages and stuff like that. But ideally, depending, it means even within, even if they're outside the Varnashram, if they have these, their honesty, if they have these qualities, they can actually live in the Vedic society, in the cities and stuff like that. But if they're dishonest, they're thieves and stuff like that, they can't live within the cities. They have to live outside. Right? Because if you're out in the forest and you see something you like, you take it, there's no breaking any rule. But if you're in the city, see something you like and take it, it's a problem. Right? So in some sense, yeah. Verses 22 to 38, the Brahmachari Ashram. Sri Krishna continued, the twice-born member of society achieves second birth through the sequence of purificatory ceremonies culminating in Gayatri initiation. Right, because there's the Purushacharya Vidhi and everything. Right? Being summoned by the spiritual master, he should reside within the guru's ashram and with a self-controlled and mind carefully study the Vedic literature. The brahmachari should regularly dress with a belt of straw and deerskin garments. He should wear matted hair, carry a rod and a water pot, and be decorated with aksha beads and a sacred thread. Right, so when you're out in the forest and that, you're just following just the Vedic, and you're doing just fire sacrifices and that, then this would be specifically the dress, like that. If you're following the Pancharatrik system, that's the lifestyle you're using, then they would shave their heads, keep a sika, and like this. Because you require that kind of level of cleanliness for doing the deity worship. But for doing the Vedic yajna, you're clean, you're pure, just the matted hair and all that, then, you know, goes all right with the yajnas.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? Because the fire's there, it makes smoke. If there are any bugs in your hair, they're going to stay away. But for the deities, they got nice clothes, smell good, the bugs will go from your hair on the deities. So, uncool. Therefore, you shave your head. Right? Anybody wondered why you don't keep matted locks? Yeah, okay. But because here, carrying pure kusha grass in his hand, he should never accept a luxurious or sensuous sitting place. Right? Just, you know, what's necessary. He should not unnecessarily polish his teeth. Right? So, that's why I was saying, did you catch what I was saying before?
Yes.
That's what we're meaning. So is that you understand the culture, it just means you just brush your teeth.
Yes.
But you don't get in there, try to make them shiny and this and that. Nor should he bleach and iron his clothes. Right? It's just he has the cloth, and then he cleans it, and then as it gets, you know, old and you know, faded and those kind of things like that, you know, he doesn't worry about that, because he's a brahmachari. Grihasthas, they do that. They bleach the clothes, they iron the clothes, they keep it really good, in good fashion. But the brahmacharis don't. So he unnecessarily polishes teeth. So he brushes his teeth, because that's just the part of the standard thing. He brushes teeth, clean his tongue, rinse his mouth, you know, this is all done. A brahmachari should always remain silent while bathing, eating, attending sacrificial performances, chanting japa, or passing stool and urine. During these times, you just don't talk.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, like that. He should not cut his nails and hair, including the armpit and pubic hair. Right, because otherwise, then this is, it means how you say, shaving the armpits is just standard in India. Everybody does it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that, oh, no, it's not manly and all that. You know, then, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So nowadays, they shave their chest hair, but they'll keep their armpit hair. I really don't understand, because they're being manly, right? Yeah. Whatever. When observing the vow of celibate brahmachari life, should never pass semen. If the semen by chance spills out by itself, the brahmachari should immediately take bath and water, control his breath by pranayam, and chant the Gayatri mantra. Right? Purified and fixed in consciousness, the brahmachari should worship the fire gods, sun, acharya, cows, brahmanas, guru, elderly, respectable persons, and demigods. Right? So, in other words, it's by chanting that you purify the consciousness. Right? And then, then the brahmachari himself, then he worships fire god, sun, So fire god means he does the daily yagyas. Fire god, sun god, he chants the Gayatri mantra, the acharyas, that's the guru, the cows, he worships Brahmins, guru, elderly, respectable persons, and demigods.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we don't worry about the demigods. We're respectful, but we don't worship.
Yes.
He should perform such worship at sunrise and sunset without speaking, but by silently chanting or murmuring the appropriate mantras. Right, so he can either silently do it, means within the mind, or he can say very quietly, just whatever makes the best focus.
Mm-hmm. Once,
means he says the appropriate mantras, means the just generic Vedic one where they have Brahma Gayatri, but then if you're using Pancharatrik, you'd have those, or if it's Tantric, you'd have those.
Okay.
You know, it's just like we have all three. The Brahma Gayatri, that's Vedic.
Yes.
The Mula Mantras, those are Tantric. And then the Gayatri Mantras are Pancharatra.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, we use all three. Because the Pancharatra is a mix between Tantric and Vedic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they're derivatives of the Vedic.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But the Vedic then uses the Vedic mantras and all that. Well, the Tantric uses all these, short mula mantras and bead syllables and all that.
Okay.
It's all based on the Veda, but it just specializes in that area. But we have all three. Mm-hmm. One should know the Acharya as myself, meaning Krishna, and never disrespect him in any way. One should not envy him, thinking him an ordinary man, because he's representing Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But his own sadhana, his own development, that's there, but for the sake, he's representing Krishna. You deal in that way, you'll always make advancement.
Yes.
That's the point, because Krishna's in the heart, and he sees how you're dealing properly, according to what Krishna's given direction, and you're doing that to please Krishna, Krishna's right there. So then worship of the Guru means worship of Krishna, and then you advance.
Okay, yeah.
For he is the representative of all the demigods. Srila Prabhupada comments on verse 27, which is quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, 146. This is a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 11:17-27, spoken by Lord Krishna when he was questioned by Uddhava regarding the four social and spiritual orders of society. The Lord was specifically instructing how a brahmachari should behave under the care of a spiritual master. Spiritual master is not an enjoyer of facilities offered by his disciples. He is like a parent. Without the attentive service of his parents, a child cannot grow to manhood. Similarly, without the care of the spiritual master, one cannot rise to the plane of transcendental service.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they're similar.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. That's the same principle. The spiritual master is also called acharya, or a transcendental professor of spiritual science. The Manusamhita 2:140 explains the duties of an acharya, describing that a bona fide spiritual master accepts charge of disciples, teaches them the Vedic knowledge with all its intricacies, and gives them their second birth. Right? The intricacies means you hear the mantras, you have the translations, you have the rituals that go with them, but also then the esoteric aspects of devotional service. That's the intricacies. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So that's the point. Depending upon the attitude of the disciple, they may learn the intricacies, or it's called rahasyas, or not. So as we mentioned before, Gotama's son didn't learn them.
Yes.
Like that. The ceremony performed to initiate a disciple into the study of spiritual science is called upaniti, or the function that brings one near to the spiritual master. One who cannot be brought near to a spiritual master cannot have a sacred thread. And thus he is indicated to be a Shudra. The sacred thread on the body of a Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya is a symbol of initiation by the spiritual master. It is worth noting if worn merely to boast of high parent. It is worth nothing if worn merely to boast of high parentage. So if someone's born in that family but doesn't follow, doesn't have that connection with the spiritual master, is not following the duties, then they're wearing it is simply a social prestige. But it has no meaning. Like that. The duty of the spiritual master is to initiate a disciple with the sacred thread ceremony. And after the samskar, or purificatory process, the spiritual master actually begins to teach the disciple about the Vedas. Because technically without that Upanayana, you can't study the Veda. Right? It means you can study the Puranas and everything else, but you just can't study the Vedic mantras. Right? A person born a Shudra is not barred from such spiritual initiation, provided he is approved by the spiritual master, who is duly authorized to award his disciple the right to be a Brahmana if he finds him perfectly qualified. So it's not that because he's born a Shudra, he can't be a Brahmin. If he has the nature of a Brahmin, he'll be accepted that way. Just like the son of a Brahmin, if he acts like a Shudra, he'll be dealt with in that way. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, he's a spiritual master. He must be able to see who has a Brahminical quality inside
Teaching. So you just see what are the characters there by the nature, how they deal. And then you see if they have that potential for this or not. So that's why then you also have, because generally the farther down the character, the longer it takes for them to settle down. Right? So that's why you see is that they have timings when they would generally get Upanayana, you know, get initiation, and then the cutoff point. So it gets older and older as they go down. So the Brahmins, it starts the earliest, ends the earliest. Kshatriyas starts a little after, ends a little that Vaishya, and then after that. But for us, because we're working from outside the Varnashram system, our only qualification is coming in from the devotional. Therefore, we take the Brahminical. So that means then the cutoff starts early and ends early for the Vedic initiation. For the Pancharatrik, when you qualify yourself, then through that, then the body changes. That's how then we are able to get the Brahminical initiation, or you know, or the Vedic initiation, even though we're past the age limit.
Yes. Yes.
Does that make sense? Like that. It's only through second initiation.
Yes.
Not yet.
When we have in Iskon, father who is a Brahmana, and then he has a son, can he just perform this?
He can, but he should be, you know, sure that he has those qualities. Because if not, in any case, by the father doing that, he's going to be getting the karma and be responsible. So if the kid goes out there and is crazy, he gets the rap. He may just say, no, but, you know, no, it doesn't work like that. And it's not that other Brahmins will they'll accept that, yes, they have to chant the Gayatri and all that, but they don't accept them that they're qualified to do the worship and all that kind of stuff. It's not automatic because they did. Now, if they get second initiation, then generally as long as that's there and you don't see anything otherwise, then you would engage them. Then if by engaging them you see that they're not really qualified, then you might have them do other services. But the other means, does that make sense? In other words, if they're second initiated, you would generally take it that they are qualified, and only if they prove themselves otherwise, right? While if they've gotten the Upanayana simply by their family, then you'll expect that they'll be regular and chant their Gayatri, but you don't necessarily give them the position and privileges of someone in that position until they prove it.
So the presumption goes the other way.
Yeah, it goes the other way. Because you see, nowadays it is more social. Like that, you know, because it's not understood what you're looking for. Means the Pancharatrik, you're looking for the devotional qualifications, though they may not have material qualifications so much. But for the Upanayanam, for the Vedic, you're looking for the qualities. They don't have the qualities, it doesn't work. So that means technically the qualities required for the Upanayanam are higher. The material qualities are higher than the material qualities required for Pancharatrik initiation. That's not understood. It's understood it's a lower initiation, so they think the standard's lower. On the spiritual platform, yes, but on the material platform, not at all. You know, even second initiated devotees, Prabhupada would make the point that I think he had heard something some leaders had mentioned, that some devotees, you know, weren't chanting properly or this or that. Prabhupada said the president should call all the second initiated devotees into his office one by one. When they come in, tell them, say all the mantras. And if they couldn't, he said, take away the threat. I don't think it ever happened, but, you know, the point is that they have this, use it, you know, take it seriously. But if they don't, I can remember someone saying, you know, they ask him, do you know this? And says, well, not really. I hum along. It's kind of like, all right, cool. You know? Yeah, so one has to understand Varnashram is dealing with the material qualities. It's a lower thing because it's dealing with the conditioned nature. So the Atma and the devotion is higher. So it's not dependent upon that. So it's just like the bhakti is not dependent upon Varnashram to develop. So even someone outside Varnashram could develop the bhakti. And then with time, by that, they develop the good qualities of a devotee. Naturally, they have the good qualities of Varnashram. So they can either follow Varnashram or not. But if you're going to use the Upanayanam, which is a Varnashram thing exclusively, it's not a Pancharatrik thing or a Bhagavat thing, then you have to have the material qualifications that Varnashram defines. So it's not understood. You know, it's lower, but materially it's higher. Like that. So one has to be very careful about these things. Okay, good. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.